Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, Sharks fans. Welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 43. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude,
we're doing a special episode here. It's Sunday, right before game two of Sharks versus Ducks, and we're posting a little bit more often. We're doing more shows now that the playoffs have begun.
We've got the playoff fever.
That's right.
We're not going to let the disappointment of game one stop us.
No. And before we get to the disappointment of game one, we need to... episode 43. You got any 43s in your hip pocket, dude?
43. No.
You know, Ally Afraidy was number 43.
Very nice.
The Planet. That's right. Ray Whitney was also 43.
Okay.
And Scott Hannon, once upon a time, was 43 before he moved to 22. The Minister of Defense, Scott Hannon.
We could have really used him the other night, not.
Yeah. Well, I guess the Avalanche aren't really using him that much either.
Yeah. They've been what a great signing for them.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons actually why they fired their GM. I think they were mad about that signing.
Yeah. So we have Vlasic for cheaper and he's better.
Right.
And Scotty Hannon, nice guy. Good player.
Yeah.
But don't miss him.
Not $4.5 million.
No.
We got to talk about game one. Game one was a very disappointing game. Sharks outshot the Ducks 2-1. And yet still lose the game. It was even after two periods, 0-0. And that feeling of dread started to seep into my thinking. I don't know about you, but when you're out shooting your opponent 2-1 and you're still tied, you think to yourself, all it takes is one goal for the momentum to shift. And that's what happened.
That's what happened, dude. I wish that the Sharks had been able to win that first game, that the tank was on fire when we got there. For the listeners who were there, you know what we're talking about. In the playoffs, I think there's no place other than the tank that can quite get as frenzied, and the fans are certainly rabid in their enthusiasm for playoff hockey. And we've been waiting for this for 6 months, you know. The Sharks have had an amazing sort of storybook season for most of the year. And then to have the wind kind of sucked out of our sails.
Yeah.
And as the game started to go on, you're right. We just kind of had that feeling that the more it kind of goes like this, the less likely, the Sharks were going to take that game.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. And I think the Sharks, one stat I've read is the Sharks have now gone almost five games without an even strength goal. So that's, or five home games, I believe the stat is. So that's not good. Ooh. Sharks better break that tonight in game two where they're not going to have any chance of winning. So, yeah, there's lots of things. I wrote a post on our blog, which is sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, about who I thought maybe was, to blame if you wanted to lay more blame one person. And I put the blame on Tom McClellan. I found some coaching decisions made to be very strange. And just to give a quick recap, basically I said, matching up Joe's line against their top line was a mistake. I think that should have become apparent after at least a certain amount of time in the game, and they should have changed that up, and they didn't. The other thing is this dump and chase idea is not working.
Is Kevin Constantine back?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, keep going, dude.
Yeah, so dump and chase didn't work. I'm not saying dump and chase is always a bad strategy, but the way it was implemented didn't work. And the third thing is they played Jody Shelley 2 minutes, which means they were playing with a short bench on purpose. And I would much rather have the fourth line be an actual threat as opposed to a line that sits on the bench the entire game.
Dude, I agree with all three of those points. My take on it is this, and I also, not to rehash what we write in the blog, but I think it's important to talk about it, is on NHL Live on Friday, they had Dave Strader on from
right.
Versus. And he talked about a conversation he had with Dan Bylsma, the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, where he said, how do you plan to match up against the Flyers? He says, I'm not changing anything. We're playing the way we play, and that's how we're going to play.
Right.
Our style. And I don't understand how you become, you win the President's Trophy. You're one of the most exciting teams in hockey. And then you change what you're going to do to match up against the 8 seed.
Yeah.
Why are we changing anything? And it goes into the dump and chase where we saw later in the game where the game should probably be at its most tightest checking moment. And Boyle and Erhoff appeared to be able to gain the zone whenever the hell they felt like it at that point in the game. Why wasn't that happening the whole game, dude?
I wish I knew. Clearly, their strategy was to get the defense to turn around, which is a lot of times what you want to do against good defenders. You want them to turn, put their back to the goal, you know, the goal they're trying to score on, and skate back into their zone. And I guess that kind of worked, but the problem was is the Sharks didn't win any of those races to the puck, and there were so many clear outs early that there was no rhythm whatsoever in the zone, and there was just so many things about the game. It just seemed like there was no real emphasis on puck recovery. A thing that I really get mad at is there's open ice, lanes to the middle of the ice that they don't take. They choose to shoot instead or try to pass through it. You got to gain those areas. And I think McClellan maybe made a little reference about that, is they need to get to the difficult ice. I think he used a term similar to that, the hard ice to get to. And the Sharks just didn't do that. They if you look at the shot diagram where all the shots came, most of them came from way outside the perimeter. It was like Mike Greer shot 35 times. So very frustrating. I have confidence in the coaching staff. I have confidence in McClellan and the players. I know they're going to make adjustments. I hope they realize, listen, we have the speed and the size to go at these guys. We don't have to try and go around them. We can go through them.
And that's what we did. We did 4 out of 6 times this year.
Yeah.
That's why I don't understand why things have changed. Why are we changing what we do best? And I am fully expecting to see that these changes that we're talking about, they're going to be evident tonight. Now, maybe not Jody Shelley. Now, mm-hmm. I think we both agree that, well, we disagreed at first. I thought Shelley should have been in there. But then noticing, you know, after, you know, he plays 2 minutes and 2 seconds, and then George Parros played 4 minutes and 24 seconds. You know, clearly, Parros is not in Randy Carlyle's plans really either.
Right.
They're there to cancel each other out. So why not just pull Shelley out and put in Jamie McGinn, dude?
Or if you want to go sort of a middle road, you could do Claude Lemieux, because Claude Lemieux can get his hands dirty, but he does have some skill. He will try to create scoring chances, and that's just something that Shelley doesn't do. It's not in his job description. So
if you want some raw emotion, mm-hmm. Claude Lemieux will provide that.
I hope so.
Although we did have our fair share of dumb penalties in that game.
Right.
Do we really want to put in someone who could... the referees will be staring at him, waiting for him to do something stupid.
I don't think he could do anything as stupid as taking 2 offensive zone penalties in the third period, the way that Jonathan Chichu did. I mean, I understand he's trying hard, and I'm sure he felt bad about it, and I don't want to just completely run him down, but that is a horrible time in the game to take a penalty, period, and it's certainly a horrible time in the game to take an offensive zone penalty. I mean, that is just stupid, and I'm sure he feels bad about it and all that kind of stuff, and there's no reason to blast him too hard, but I can't imagine Claude Lemieux, with all the experience he has, he's a Conn Smythe winner. You think Claude Lemieux is really going to go into the game in the third period and start hacking away at people in the offensive zone? It's just not going to happen.
Listen, that's why he's here, right?
I hope
so. He's here for this moment, for games like this. It would not be surprising if we saw Claude Lemieux tonight, but it also wouldn't be surprising if Todd McClellan was adamant and stubborn and didn't change anything mm-hmm. as far as the lineup goes. Now, with matching up the top line against the top line, dude, this is how I feel about it, and I think that you agree that, you know, it takes away from our strength.
Right.
And if their top line's going to dominate, our top line's going to dominate whoever they put it out. And if it's going to be a 6-5 shootout, I would bet the Sharks every single time in a game like that.
That's right.
That we could win a free-flowing, high-wheeling shootout against the Ducks every time, because they don't have the depth to match up against that type of game. So let's play it. Let's score 11 goals. Take the over every time if you're in Vegas. And let's beat them at what we do, not at what they do.
That's right. I totally agree. And the Sharks have shown success. Flyers twice. Chicago, there's a couple of high-flying games. Even Detroit in January. Sharks can score 6 goals when they're given the chance to do it.
Can you think of one of those high-scoring games that we lost?
No.
Off the top of your head?
Not
I can't
off the top
either.
Of my head.
I can't either. So let's let the doggies loose.
Yeah.
Let them go.
Put the third lineup against Getzlaf and let Joe play against Andrew Ebbett. Good luck.
Yeah.
Andrew Ebbett, 5'9", 185 pounds, pushing Joe off the puck.
See you in the morgue.
Good luck with that.
Not going to happen. Dude, just to kind of end the discussion here on game one, we picked the Sharks in 6, right?
We did.
So that means they had to lose 2 games.
Yes, they did.
So this is one of those 2 games that they were going to lose.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think anybody had the expectation the Sharks were going to sweep. So it's not the end of the world. The Sharks are going to come out and Hopefully, I won't look like a tool for saying this on Monday when you listen to this, but they're going to win tonight.
Yeah.
I really believe that they're going to win tonight, and we're going to drop one more. I still think it's going to be 2-2 going into game five.
Okay.
So, you know.
Just to, you know.
Turn the beat around, baby.
Yeah, turn the beat around. Give it another cynical thing. The thing is, this is a must-win game. I wrote that on the blog today. This is a must-win game. James Myrtle, in his From the Rink blog, he posted a stat that said, if the home team, the higher seed team in the first round, goes up 2-0, they have an over 90% historical chance of winning the series. That's a lot, right?
Nice.
The visiting team goes up 2-0, which is what would be the case if the Ducks, God forbid, should happen to win tonight. They would be, historically, they have won about 75%, 76% of the series. So that would make the Sharks a 3-1 dog if they lost tonight. They cannot lose tonight's game. It's a must-win game, absolutely.
Agreed.
Okay. Okay, so let's go to the emails. We have an email from Sylvia. She had a Sharks question and a Sharks theory. Here we go. First, the question. Have there been teams that have won the Stanley Cup despite losing the first playoff game? Okay, so this is not an easy question just to sort of get the answer to. You can't just Google it. So what do? I go to hockeyreference.com. I start looking at all the series. I didn't have to go that far back to find a Stanley Cup winner that lost the first game. And not only lost the first game, but lost the first game at home.
Whoa.
And that is the 2006 Carolina Hurricanes. Lost not only the first game at home, they lost the first two games at home, and they lost game two in overtime.
Dude, so you're saying that if for some horrible satanic ritual reason,
right,
that we drop the game tonight, all is not lost?
All is not lost, and there is a recent historical precedent. The Canes were the 3 seed in the East that year, I believe. They had won their division, just like the Sharks have won their division. They were at home against the Montreal Canadiens, and they get shut out in the first game.
Whoa.
And they win the second game, or they lose the second game in overtime, and they come back and win the Stanley Cup. So,
I would not like to take that route.
I would not like to take that route either, but I can tell you, Sylvia, it's happened before, and it's happened before recently. So that's a good sign
okay. For
Sharks fans that want to get the noose out if they should lose tonight. Okay, here's the theory. Sylvia's theory is, I think Nabby likes drama. When there isn't enough going around him, too much happening at the other end of the rink, or defensemen are doing too good of a job, he tends to do things that are a little bit more risky as a goalie, like coming out far to fetch a loose puck. This seems to lead to avoidable mistakes that end up as goals for the other team. Your thoughts?
So you mean when you say Nabby likes drama, like he has matinee tickets to see Wicked and has a copy of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard in his locker?
I believe.
Is that what you mean?
I'm not quite sure that's what she means. Why wouldn't he like Nabokov?
I think that Nabby, it seems like when he's more involved in games,
mm-hmm.
that he plays better. And, you know, I thought he made some good saves. I didn't think it was his fault. Now, I don't know. It seemed like on the night of the game, you kind of disagreed with me on that a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the Getzlaf goal was a little weak. I mean, he had a good look at it. He wasn't screened. The first goal, I thought he was fairly screened. I wouldn't put that on Nabby necessarily. But yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I know that goalies generally like to get work. They can work up a rhythm when they're making constant saves. And actually, one of my pet statistical projects I might do in the future is to find out if there's some sort of correlation between save percentage and saves per game. If goalies make a lot of saves, if they face a lot of shots in a game, my gut tells me that they might have an actual save percentage against goalies that don't make a lot of saves per game. And you know the team that was number one in shots against this year in the NHL?
The Ducks?
The Sharks.
Oh, the Sharks.
The Sharks gave up the fewest number of shots per game.
The least amount.
The least number of shots per game. So that was the Sharks. So, Sylvia, if you're right, then does that make Nabby into a worse, quote-unquote, worse goalie than he might otherwise be? Because a lot of people use save percentage as the be-all, end-all statistic for rating goaltenders. So that's a question that we'll probably have to address in the offseason, because that's what summer months are for, is answering these crazy questions. But it's a good theory, Sylvia. I'm not sure I'm with you on that, because I think he's had to face few shots comparatively all season long. So that's just my thought, but it's a good question.
Let's hope we don't find out how much he really likes drama
in
losing, because then he'll have plenty of time to audition for the community theater production of Oklahoma down the street. You see exactly. Nabby in Oklahoma?
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful morning. No, I can't see that, but I would pay to see it. I would go.
I would.
With JR as the Dream Curly.
Seminoff as Lori. Okay. We're losing our listeners.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, in droves. Let's talk about the other series that are going on. So we made picks. I'm taking a lot of pride in the fact that the Rangers are up 2-0 on Washington right now because I believe I had that one. Most of the other series are not particularly surprising. I don't know. Do you find any other series right now? Most of the other series have gone two games. All of them have gone two games, I believe.
Yeah, I think the one that I find surprising, but I think it could change tonight, is the Vancouver-St. Louis series. St. Louis really looked overwhelmed. And they looked overwhelmed. Andy Murray was not happy after game one. Called out a lot of his young players that they looked just stunned to be in the building.
Right.
And, you know, game two, you know, they played all right. But at the end of the game, if you watch that game, there was a lot of, speaking of drama.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drama at the end of the game between Vancouver kind of started taking some shots at some of the St. Louis Blues players. Andy Murray was beyond livid on the bench,
yeah,
slamming on the glass and pointing at the Vancouver coaching staff. And he was furious. So did Vancouver just kind of give St. Louis a new lease on life and a reason to play even harder today?
It's possible. I think Vancouver's a fairly highly penalized team, so that may just be par for the course for them. I don't know. It happened sort of what I expected. I think St. Louis, they were just sort of happy to be there, and they may have sort of fallen back because they were happy to be there. That's the thing. I'm a little bit surprised that the Philly and Pittsburgh series isn't a little bit closer. I know game two was pretty close, but game one was kind of a blowout, and you could see Philly just sort of roll up the tent here, and I hope that doesn't happen. I don't think that's going to happen.
Philly, they shot themselves in the foot, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, they had that second game and taking late penalties, taking stupid penalties. At the end of the game, you're going to give the Penguins a 5-on-3.
In overtime.
And then negate your own power play that you had.
Right.
Because Hal Gill took a penalty. That's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah. And they can't even blame Daniel Carcillo for any of that.
Right.
So, you know, right now, I mean, they're playing right now as we're recording. And so we'll see how that game turns out. But I expect the Blues to bounce back. God, dude. Columbus.
I know.
Come on.
Think of something, Columbus. Dazzle me. Come up with something. Play like you actually care. Because I was watching the game, and it was 0-0, and then Detroit scored, and then it was 1-1 right away. And I said, okay, maybe Columbus has got some life. Nah. No, they don't.
They're so overmatched. I'm going to put on my bitter hat for a second here.
Go for it.
So our reward for being the best team in the league is this has got to be the worst matchup of those top seeds in the West. You know, any of the lower seeds would have been a way better matchup for the Sharks.
Yeah.
And instead, our present, our gift from the hockey gods is the Anaheim Ducks, which is not the best matchup for us. It just seems, it's so unfair, Mike.
It's terribly.
It's unfair.
Terribly unfair.
I'm not bitter anymore.
Right.
But Calgary, too. Calgary in Chicago.
Way to cough it up.
Way to cough it up twice.
Yeah.
They've done it twice. I think they're done.
I think they're done, too. We both thought that was going to be a short series.
I said that's going to be a sweep. Could happen.
Yeah.
They're too banged up, and they look defeated also. What do you make of maybe the best series going on right now is Canes Devils?
Yeah. Well, I still think the Devils are going to win. They look good in game one. Canes played a good game in game two, managed to win in overtime. That might be the best series to watch, and I think that might have been the series that no one was paying attention to going into the postseason. Right now, it looks like almost every other series, hopefully with the Sharks being the exception, are going to be quick. And I think that Carolina Devils series could be pretty good. So maybe that's the one to watch going forward, obviously other than the Sharks.
The thing that's concerning is that it appears that there could be three sweeps on our hands here. Boston is going to sweep. The Canadiens are terrible.
Right.
They could sweep that series out. Detroit, I mean, Columbus might steal one game just based on the emotion they'll have.
At home. Yeah.
At home. But, and then the Chicago-Calgary series, that looks like that's going to be pretty short. So, you know, the worst case scenario for the Sharks is that the other three series in the West could all be over this week, and the Sharks will just be entering game five.
Right. That could happen, and that would be a horrible situation because, well, you know, then you can start, then we can have this wonderful discussion that everybody does every season when teams are resting and saying, oh, will they get rusty and will they not be able to come out and have their legs and so on. So we'll have that discussion if and when it's warranted, but we're going to hold off on that one for now because we're going to wrap up this week's podcast. I want to let you know we are probably going to continue to record new podcasts at a little quicker clip than we did during the regular season. We're thinking about doing one after game two and then maybe one next weekend after game five. So we'll see.
So you're talking about game three.
Yeah, game three, excuse me.
Yes.
Game three on Tuesday and then again on the weekend. And then we'll sort of feel it out how it's going after that. So hopefully
we're going to feel out our listeners.
That's right. Step on up, listeners, and we'll feel you out. So check out our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, and you can send us questions and we'll answer them on the air. And we will talk to you very soon.
Later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.